Thank you very much, Dr. Alderman. Our next speaker is Dr. Maureen Canavan, who is going to talk about mental health prescription practices and medication availability among Ghanaian, thank you, psychiatric hospitals. Dr. Canavan has been on the research faculty at Yale School of Public Health since 2011, and as a member of the Global Health Leadership Institute, she conducts qualitative and quantitative data analysis of GHLI studies in countries including Ghana, Ethiopia, and China, and secondary data analysis of publicly available data sets. Her research interests include employment, mental health, and health policy. Dr. Canavan's previous research focused on involuntary job loss and depressive symptoms. Dr. Canavan.
Can you hear me okay? All right. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to come talk today. As noted, I'm going to be talking about mental health prescription practices and medication availability among the three psychiatric hospitals in Ghana. I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so the first thing is there is a wide variety sometimes in the terminology for mental and neurological disorders, but mental illness, mental disorders, mental health conditions, and neuropsychiatric disorders all fall under this umbrella. And as a recent report on non-communicable diseases said, it's the set of medical conditions that affect a person's thinking, feeling, mood, ability to relate to others, and daily functioning. And it includes the conditions we traditionally think of, such as schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, and mood disorders. But it also extends beyond that to conditions like epilepsy, Parkinson's disease, and Alzheimer's. Mental and neurological disorders affect millions of people worldwide. And this population has higher rates of disability, mortality, a higher number of comorbidities, as well as increased levels of poverty. So what is the health and financial burden of mental disorders? While it was the leading cause of years lost to disability globally, and WHO estimates for 2010 said that the combined indirect and direct cost to low and middle income countries was over $870 billion. And this cost is expected to double by 2030. One other thing to note is that recent estimates are that the mental health treatment gap in low and middle income countries is over 95%. So we have to think of the fact that we have a greater burden of disease and limited resources to deal with it. So this places a very high burden on those that are administering care. So in low and middle income countries, the most common method for treating mental disorders is in terms of psychotropic prescriptions. So patient or physicians say that in terms of what affects their prescribing practices, it's safety and efficacy of the medication. However, most physicians feel that they're insufficiently trained in terms of medication prescribing, and prescribing patterns differ by specialty. One prescription practice that has been noted is polypharmacy, which is the use of excessive or unnecessary medications. Now, despite the potentials for negative interactions that have negative effects on both physical and mental health, this is widespread in its use. And previous studies that have sought to evaluate it within low and middle income countries have had different, we'll say, methodological issues that maybe they didn't control for the diagnosis type, they've only assessed a specific medication relative to others, or a specific medication class. So I wanted to focus in on mental health in Ghana. Now, 2% of their health budget goes towards mental health, and patients are seen at three public psychiatric hospitals in the country, Accra, Ankafol, and Pantang. Now, Accra, I gave you the number of beds so you can get an idea of size. Accra is the largest and first hospital. One thing to note is that all of the hospitals are clustered in the southern region of the country. So looking ahead, and just a quick pause for the psychiatric nurse prevalence, and I just want to show you where the hospitals are. So this is Accra, then nearby is Pantang, and about 150 kilometers away is Ankafol Hospital. Now, one thing to note that, and I think you hopefully can see it, the darker areas are where there's more clustering of psychiatric nurses. So psychiatric nurses, due to the lack of psychiatrists, end up providing most of the direct patient care. But as you can see, there is a huge lack throughout the center of the country. And if you were just to get kind of an overall estimate in Ghana, there are about 2 psychiatric nurses per 100,000 population. So unfortunately, the conditions are a little bleaker when you take it for psychiatrists. Again, you see that they are clustered, obviously, where the psychiatric hospitals are in the south. And on average throughout Ghana, there are about 8 psychiatrists per 10 million population. One other thing to take into account is that because other specialties have very limited training in psychiatry, it's not that they can rely on a generalist or some other physician to help deal with the burden of mental illness. Okay. So what did we seek to do specifically in our study? Well, we looked among individuals seeking outpatient care at the 3 psychiatric hospitals, and we focused in on those diagnosed with schizophrenia and delusional disorders, or epilepsy. We looked at the variation in psychotropic medication classes prescribed and the variation in the availability of those medications. For our sample, we used data from the Mental Health Information System, and this record was established as part of the Mental Health and Poverty Project in 2009. And in Ghana, that was brought about with the goal of gathering data about outpatient as well as inpatient services. Now, one important thing to note is that this instituted the use of ICD-10 codes for psychiatric and neurological disorders in the hospitals. Previously, they were not using a comparable set of diagnostic tools. So in terms of data, the MHIS form included, as I noted, the ICD-10 diagnosis. It included information on medication class, medication availability, and many socio-demographic covariates, including age, education, marital status, religion, employment, geographic region, and family history of mental illness. So what did we see in terms of our sample? Well, we looked at outpatient visits between May 1st, 2009 and April 30th, 2010. We collapsed the data that was obtained on visit by patient, and then we used the most recent patient visit and diagnosis. So we limited our sample to individuals who only had 1 primary psychiatric diagnosis, so they couldn't have been diagnosed with schizophrenia and depression or epilepsy and a mood disorder. Then we chose to focus in on patients who were diagnosed with only schizophrenia and delusional disorders, or those diagnosed with epilepsy. So what did our patient population look like? The mean age was 37 years. Just under half were unemployed. The vast majority of the population was Christian. Over 1/4 of patients had a family history of mental illness, and more than half had never been married or had at least secondary school level education. So this looks at the breakdown in terms of their primary ICD-10 diagnosis. We had schizophrenia and delusional disorders, epilepsy, mood disorders, substance abuse disorders, and then we collapsed the other less common cases, which were organic mental disorders, neurotic disorders, behavioral syndromes, adult personality disorders, mental retardation, and other unspecified mental disorders. And we chose to focus in on schizophrenia and epilepsy because overall, among outpatients seen at the 3 psychiatric hospitals, as you can see, schizophrenia accounted for over half of the population, and then epilepsy throughout the country was the second most common, although you can see that the distribution varied by the hospital that people went to. Ankafol in particular is known as a hospital to seek care for patients with epilepsy. Okay, so what did we see in terms of prescribing practices? Well, first, I just want to go through how we did the breakdown. So antipsychotics were noted as the primary medication class to prescribe. So we looked at if individuals were prescribed only antipsychotics, if they were prescribed antipsychotics as well as other medication classes, so we were looking at class-level polypharmacy, or if they were prescribed other classes of medication but not prescribed antipsychotics. So the other classes included anti-anxiety, anticholinergics, anticonvulsants, antidepressants, and anti-manic medications. So as you can see, across all of the hospitals, over half of the population of patients experience polypharmacy. And I thought of interest, between 4 and nearly 20% of patients, depending on the hospital which they sought care, were not prescribed antipsychotics at all. So how does the situation look for epilepsy? Well, as I said, we use that same basic breakdown in terms of medication class that we were looking across, except being that anticonvulsants were the most indicated for prescriptions. We looked at anticonvulsants alone, then polypharmacy with other medication classes, and then not being prescribed anticonvulsants. So again, you can see not as high as in the schizophrenia and delusional disorder populations, but on average about 20% of patients with epilepsy experience polypharmacy. And between 4 and nearly 20% of patients with epilepsy were not prescribed an anticonvulsant. So what was the situation in terms of medication availability? Well, Ghana is one country in Africa that actually you get free psychotropic medications at the public psychiatric hospitals. So when we looked at the breakdown, available as prescribed meant that that patient was able to get all the medications that the doctor prescribed at the time of their visit at the hospital at which they sought care. There was the other option that patients were not able to get the medications as prescribed, and that was either that it wasn't there or they had to obtain it at a later date and time, potentially through a private pharmacy, in which case they would have to pay. And then unknown refers to the fact if it just wasn't answered, unfortunately, on the question. So we found that for individuals with schizophrenia and delusional disorders, on average about 10% were not able to get their medication as prescribed. So looking at the situation for epilepsy, and again that follows the same breakdown in terms of their availability of medications, a more staggering story in the sense that nearly 40% of epileptics were not able to get their medication as it was prescribed. So as with any study, we had some limitations in our data. One thing to note is that despite the fact that they instituted the use of this new MHIS record form, different staff members handled the paper record as it progressed with the patient throughout their care. So there is the potential for reporting error in the data. And additionally, we looked at our data cross-sectionally, and we did not measure adherence to the medication or if the patient even took the medication. We were only able to measure if it was made available to the patient. Finally, we looked at outpatients seen at the public psychiatric hospitals. So it's important to see if the same patterns of polypharmacy and medication availability are seen in different contexts, such as within the inpatient setting. I do think that there are a few important points to take away in terms of this. We saw that polypharmacy is widely used for these psychiatric conditions with the majority of schizophrenic patients and nearly a quarter of epileptic patients being prescribed multiple classes of drugs. So this, I think, speaks to the need to set guidelines and establishing monitoring to ensure that patients are being prescribed the fewest and most effective medications for their disorders. This is something that I think we still struggle with in high-income countries, so it's not that we have the answers here either, but this is a vulnerable population, so attention to the quality of care they receive is important. Additionally, it's important to note that between 10 and 40% of medications are not available to the patients as they're prescribed. So I think this points to the idea to further look, is it an access issue? Would improved training on the medications that are available within the country help psychiatrists and psychiatric nurses as they deal with this population? I want to give a special thank you to my collaborators, Elizabeth Bradley, Emily Cherlin, Helen Jack, Angela Aforiata, Samuel Heaney, and Heather Sipsma. Thank you.